Human and animal societies are replete with hierarchies, often intricate social structures in which the animals at the top of the social heap enjoy a variety of benefits. But a study published this week in Science that looked at the changes in a wild baboon society over a period of 9 years suggests that life at the top may not be all it's cracked up to be. Carrie has the story.
Being alpha male in a society of baboons certainly has its perks. Ample access to mates, high paternity rates, and easy access to food. But are there also drawbacks to holding such a lofty position? It's a question that intrigued Jean Altman, a professor of biology at Princeton University.
We were particularly interested in how an individual's position in a hierarchy, in a society that's structured by having a top dog, somebody who's next and somebody next down on the hierarchy, how that kind of structure, which many animal societies and human societies have, how that affects physiology and then ultimately affects well-being and survival.
To determine those effects on physiology, well-being, and survival, researchers commonly focus on two hormones, glucocorticoid, a class of stress hormones, and the sex hormone testosterone. The common wisdom holds that levels of these hormones in individuals depend on their social ranking and whether that ranking is vulnerable to change.
The major hypotheses suggested that high rank, high social status, often referred to as being alpha ranking, is associated with both high stress levels and high testosterone levels during social instability, during changes in the social rank. But during other times, during stability, that high rank would have low stress levels. That's one of the benefits thought to be of high rank, and no testosterone differences among individuals.
To test those hypotheses, Altman and five colleagues focused on a wild population of savanna baboons in Kenya. Practicing a non-invasive means of sample collection, one that wouldn't interfere with the natural phenomena they were trying to observe, the team ultimately collected a wealth of data.
Taking advantage of the fact that we had five different social groups and 9 years of data, we were able to study these processes in 125 adult males.
The team observed fights between pairs of adversarial males and used those incidents to infer the overall social hierarchy of males within each group, which was reevaluated every month. They also determined the level of stability within the hierarchy.
We used a definition that a month was considered stable if the top three ranks were the same in the month before and the month after.
Finally, to determine individual hormone levels, the team collected fecal samples from members of the hierarchy. That data source, says Altman, had several advantages. One is that it integrated hormone levels over time.
It's quite good for looking on a monthly level at what's the dominance rank over the month, what's the hormone level, not at a particular moment when a lion jumps out at individuals, but in general over the month.
And, of course, collecting these samples didn't interfere with the animal's natural behavior.
It's not disruptive. The animals just deposit their samples. My Kenyan assistants say they make donations and move on in their activities.
By correlating samples with the individual ranks and hierarchical stability, the team drew three conclusions. First, in periods of social instability, stress levels of males increased, as expected. Second, and not so expected, stability had no effect on the relationship between status and hormone levels. That is, males that exhibited higher levels of a particular hormone did so at both stable and unstable times. But the third conclusion was the most surprising.
There was a major discontinuity between being the top dog, or the top baboon in our case, and being second ranking. What we found was that rank one was high all the time in glucocorticoid levels and stress levels. We also had a number of pairs of males where they had occupied both positions at some time during these 9 years. And again, we found this, that when they were top ranking, their stress levels were higher than when they were second ranking.
In other words, it's stressful at the top, and it could be hazardous too. Altman points out that though stress hormones provide a boost in the short term, they can have potentially serious consequences over longer periods.
Glucocorticoids help provide the energetic boost and the fast action to respond to immediate emergencies. But in the long term, because they do this at the cost of shutting down reproduction and bodily repair and other maintenance and reproductive activities, having high levels of glucocorticoids has been well known to have potential real costs in terms of some major health deficits over the long term.
As to the kinds of things that can take these tolls, Altman suggests that it's a combination of both psychological factors, such as the number of challenges that the alpha male receives, and energetic stressors, such as the need for repeated fighting and continual mate guarding. Dorothy Cheney, a professor of biology at the University of Pennsylvania who's not affiliated with this study, says that the study's highly individual view of stress provides a more nuanced view of societies that are sometimes studied in the aggregate.
They've done a really good job in looking at individual levels and variation in the stress response. So they haven't just lumped all high-ranking animals under one category. And as a result, they've uncovered a very subtle difference, you know, among alpha males and beta males.
Cheney also notes the benefits of the sampling technique used by the team.
One of the wonderful things about measuring stress non-invasively like this through fecal samples is it gives you an opportunity, in a sense, to interview the animal, to ask him what is it that causes stress and, in some cases, what factors help to alleviate it. So it's a wonderfully non-invasive means of getting inside the animal's mind, which makes it a tremendously useful and valuable tool in these studies of wild animals. The other component of the study that's really good is that they don't simply just measure stress levels. They have excellent behavioral assays as well, where they can actually look at the particular behaviors that seem to be associated with higher or lower stress.
Moreover, says Cheney, given the stress at the top of the heap, the paper highlights the question of whether the benefits of being alpha male are worth it.
It seems quite clear here that the alpha male is undergoing considerable stress, which, as the authors emphasize, may be costly in terms of disease and parasite resistance and so on. We find that in contrast that the beta males, although they are experiencing slightly lower reproductive rates, and they may be mating at a slightly lower rate, they're also not incurring some of the costs associated with alpha status. So when I read the paper, one of the questions I asked is, why not just settle for being a beta male?
Altman agrees that it's an important question.
One of the next kinds of things is to understand just when being top dog, the costs outweigh the benefits. And then I think the other thing is that even though we found similar overall findings that instability leads to higher stress levels, I think it's going to be important to understand how much instability really impacts individuals and in what forms.
For Science, this is Carrie Klein.
You can read the study, Life at the Top, Rank and Stress in Wild Male Baboons, along with a related perspective article by Robert Sapolsky in this week's Science.